This mission is going to compare two different substances within an animal which are forbidden to eat. The first of those is chelev, which refers to the fats which are offered up on the mizbeach when the animal is bought as a korban, so the equivalent fats in a regular animal which is slaughtered to be eaten would be forbidden. And the second substance within the animal which is forbidden to be consumed is the blood, and both of these prohibitions carry with them the severe punishment of kores, being, so to speak, cut off from Hashem. And the Mishnah discusses chomer b'chelev and badom. There is a certain stringencies which exist in the prohibition of consuming the fats, which do not exist regarding consuming the blood, chomer b'dom b'chelev. And there is also a stringency within the prohibition of consuming the blood, which does not exist regarding the prohibition of consuming the fats. So firstly, chomer b'chelev, the stringencies which exist regarding the prohibition of eating the fats are as follows. She'achelev me'alim bo'i, one can violate the prohibition of me'ilah by consuming the fats. This is referring to the fats of a korban, which are offered on the Mizbeach, and Me'ilah refers to when one benefits from something which has been designated for the sake of a korban or to the Beis HaMikdash, and he uses that item for his own benefit. So if somebody consumes the fats which have been set aside to be burnt on the Mizbeach, and he does so after the blood of that korban has been thrown onto the Mizbeach, only once that has been done are the fats fit to be brought onto the Mizbeach and burnt. And only once we reach that stage in the procedure of bringing the korban can one violate Me'ilah if he benefits from the fats. So if somebody consumes the fats at that stage, he would violate Me'ilah. As well as that, v'chayavan alav mishum pigol, one would be liable to the severe punishment of kores if he violates pigol regarding the fats. Pigol is when the kohen who is performing one of the services in the procedure of the korban has the intention, whilst performing that service, that he's going to either eat the meat of the korban, or he's going to offer up a part of the korban which is supposed to be offered up, beyond the time limit given for either eating or offering the korban. That intention invalidates the korban is considered to be pigol, and if somebody eats a part of that korban which has become pigol, then he is liable to kores, to that severe punishment. And the Mishnah is telling us that pigol can apply to the fats. If somebody consumes the fats about which the kohen intended to offer up beyond the time limit, he would be liable to kores for having violated this prohibition of pigol, the noisar. Likewise, he would be liable to kores if he eats the fats once they have been left for beyond the time limit for offering them up. That's when they become noisar, which means that they are past their time limit and they need to be burnt. The tome, and if somebody is tome and he eats the fats of the korban, he would also be liable to the severe punishment of kores for violating the aveira. Masha ein kein badom, but all of these prohibitions do not exist regarding the blood of a korban. Most of these are learnt from psukim. Pigol does not apply to a blood, since pigol, that's when the kohen has the invalidating intention, pigol only applies to something which has a matir. A matir means that there is a particular part of the procedure of bringing the korban which must be done in order to allow the next part of the procedure to be done. So for example, in order for the chelev, the fats, to be burnt on the mizbeach, the blood needs to be thrown onto the mizbeach. And therefore the procedure of throwing the blood onto the mizbeach is a matir for the sake of offering up the fats on the mizbeach. And the law is that pigol only applies to something which has a preceding matir, but not to something which is a matir for itself, so to speak. And therefore the blood, whose throwing is really the first part of the procedure, and therefore it does not have another matir, and so pigol would not apply. Alright, continues the Mishnah. V'chomer b'dom, the stringencies which exist regarding the prohibition of eating the blood are as follows. She'hadom noig v'v'heimo v'chayav oif, because the prohibition of eating blood applies to the blood of a domestic animal, a wild animal, and a bird. Bein tameim, bein tahoirim, whether it is a non-kosher species or a kosher species. V'ha'chelev inu noig ala b'v'heimo terbel v'ad, whereas the prohibition of eating fats refers only to the fats of a kosher domestic animal and no more. That is learned from Psukim, and so this is a stringency. We see that the prohibition of blood is more expansive and applies to more. Perek Tes Mishnah Aleph. The subject of this perek is the tumah and tara, the impurity and purity of different parts of an animal, and in particular is going to talk about two different types of impurity. One is called tumas oichlim, which applies to any type of edible food which touches a source of tumma, that food itself would become tome, impure, such that if it touches a different food, that different food item would also become tome under certain conditions which need to be fulfilled, which is not the focus of this perek. And the law is that a food item can only be a source of tumma for another food which touches it if it is at least the size of a kabeitza, the size of an egg. In order for the food itself to become tome, it can even be much smaller than that. However, for it to be able to transfer impurity to something else, it needs to be at least the size of an egg. And the second type of impurity which is going to be discussed is tumas nevelos, which applies specifically to a nevela, an animal which has died without a valid slaughtering. As we have already seen a couple of times in this mesechta, that is a source of tumma, and this type of tumma is more severe. Firstly, it only needs to be that the meat of the animal only needs to be the size of a kazayis, an olive, which is smaller than an egg, in order for it to transfer impurity onto something else. And as well as that, it can make even a person impure, and not only just other foods. Be it as it may, the focus of the first couple of Mishnayos is what can combine in order to make up the minimum amount to be a source of tumma. Strictly speaking, only the meat of the animal is considered a food item, or it's considered to be part of the nevela, which is a source of tumma. Whereas the inedible parts of the animal are not considered to be a source of tumma in their own right. However, there are certain parts of the body which are generally eaten together with the meat of the animal, and as such would be able to combine to make up that minimum amount, even though if it was by itself, it would not be a source of impurity. However, it can combine to part of the meat of the animal in order to, yes, be a source of tumma and to make up the minimum size. Now, the first example which the Mishnah is going to give is ha'or, the skin of the animal. If you have, for example, a small piece of meat of an animal which has been slaughtered, and that piece of meat is attached to the skin of the animal, and the piece of meat itself is smaller than the minimum size necessary. The Mishnah is going to teach that the skin would combine to make the minimum size, at least for the sake of tumas oichlim, the impurity which applies to any food. And although the skin is not eaten together with the meat, it would nevertheless combine together with the meat to make up the minimum size. And the reason for this is because it's considered to be a shomer, something which can protect the meat. And there is a law regarding impurity, tumma, that something which protects and is attached to a food item which is a source of tumma combines to make up the minimum size necessary to make something else tome. And that is the reason why the skin of the animal ha'or would make up the minimum size. V'ha'retev, and the sauce, which has congealed and hardened, it is attached to the meat, and since it's generally eaten together with the meat, so it would combine to make up the minimum size. V'ha'kippah, and the spices which have been mixed up with all of the meat. V'ha'alal, this refers to very small pieces of meat which have not been separated from the skin of the animal. V'ha'atzomes, and bones, part of the bone is marrow, which is edible. And the rest of the bone is considered to be a shomer, something which protects the marrow, and therefore all of it would combine to make up the minimum size. V'ha'gidim, this refers to the sinews and the nerves and other such parts of the animal. V'ha'karnayim, the horns, we're referring specifically to the bottom of the horns, where the skin turns into the horns, and the animal is able to bleed over there, so that's considered to be a part of the animal. V'ha'tlofayim, and the hooves, we're possibly referring specifically to the part of the foot which is just above the hooves, again, where the animal would bleed. Mitzdarfin, all of these things would combine with the meat in order to make the minimum size of a kabeitza, the size of an egg, l'tamitumas oichlim, to make another food item impure. Avalotumas nevelos, however, it would not combine to make the minimum size of a kazayas, the size of an olive, for the impurity of a nevela, an animal which has died without correct slaughtering. And this is learned from Psukim that only the part of the nevela, the part of the animal which is a source of tumma itself, only that can make up the minimum size and nothing else can combine with it. Kayotzeboy, similar to this, we find another law where we differentiate between tumas oichlim and tumas nevelos, these two types of impurities. Now, it is forbidden to eat a limb which separated from an animal whilst it was still alive. This is known as the prohibition of Eiver Min HaChai, eating a limb which separated from an alive animal, and the prohibition continues to apply to that limb even once the animal from which it was taken has been killed. Now, when an animal is slaughtered, before it dies, there is a stage known as pirkus, or when the animal is mefarkes. And that refers to the stage where the animal sort of moves about a bit wildly before it drops dead entirely. And this is sort of a stage in between when the act of slaughtering has been done, which is an act which permits the animal, the meat to be eaten. However, on the other hand, the animal is still alive. So it's sort of a bit of a contradiction. On the one hand, something has been done to permit the meat. On the other hand, there's a prohibition which says that you can't eat anything which is still alive. And the law is that if a limb is separated from the animal during this stage that it is being mefarkes, it is forbidden to eat that limb for as long as the animal is still alive. However, once the animal dies, then it is permitted to eat that limb, because it was separated from an animal which had already been slaughtered. And the only thing stopping the animal being eaten is the fact that it is still alive. So as soon as it no longer is alive, it can be eaten, and likewise the limb which was separated from it can be eaten. According to this, if somebody killed an animal instead of giving it a regular valid slaughtering, the act of killing, of course, is not something which permits the meat to be eaten, and therefore if a limb is separated from the animal whilst it is moving about, whilst it is in a stage of pirkus, then it would be regarded as a regular case of a limb which separated from an alive animal, and as such, even once the animal dies fully, it would still be forbidden to eat that limb. The law is that if somebody slaughters a regular kosher animal, the tumas oichlim, the impurity which applies to food items, so that only starts once an animal has been killed and it turns into meat which can be eaten. Whilst the animal is alive, we cannot refer to it as food. And the law is that already from the stage where the animal is being mefarkes, already then it is considered to be a food item to which the laws of tumas oichlim would apply. However, once again, if the animal was just killed, then only once it is fully dead, and it's, let's say, going to be eaten by a non-Jew, so it is considered to be a food item for him, but that is only after the stage of mefarkes, only once it is fully dead. This Mishnah teaches us now an additional law based on this, and that is, Hashochet behemah tameya lenochri, if a Jew slaughters a non-kosher animal for the sake of a non-Jew to eat, mufarkeses, and it is currently within this stage where the animal is still alive, but after the act of slaughtering. In general, the act of slaughtering has no significance for a non-kosher animal. It is forbidden to eat anyway. However, the Mishnah is going to tell us now that although if you were to kill the animal for the sake of the non-Jew to eat, then it would only be able to become impure and be considered a food once the animal was fully dead. Since you performed an act of slaughtering, which in an equivalent case of a kosher animal would give the status of food, of being a food item to the animal already from this earlier stage of mefarkeses, so too in this case where the Jew performs an act of slaughtering on a non-kosher animal which is still going to be eaten by the non-Jew, this act of slaughtering has significance over here that metama tumas oichlim, the animal can be impure in this impurity of foods already from this stage once the slaughtering has taken place. However, the impurity of a nevela would not apply, since that certainly only applies once the animal is fully dead. At Thomas, only once it has died, or if he chops off the head of the animal totally, in which case we don't view, even if the animal is moving about a bit, that is not viewed as a stage whilst the animal is still alive. Rather, the animal is considered to be halachically dead once the head has been chopped off. So in these two examples which the Mishnah has given, one regarding combining other parts to the meat, and another regarding this middle stage of mefarkeses, we see in these two examples that ribol tamin tumas oichlim imash ribol tamin tumas mevelos, the impurity of the meat as a result of it being considered a regular food applies to more cases and is more expansive than the impurity which applies to the meat as a result of it being considered a nevela, an animal which has died without a valid slaughtering. Now, one of the examples of the things which combine to for the meat for the sake of Tumas Oichlin, but not for the sake of Tumas Neveilois, was the small pieces of meat which remain attached to the skin of the animal, to the hide. Rabbi Huda says, Ha'alal ha'machunos, these small pieces of meat which were gathered and taken off of the hide of the animal and gathered together immediately after the hide of the animal was taken off. By doing so, the person is showing that he views this as food. He wants to eat it as regular meat. And as such, if there is the size of an olive in one place, then chayav olav, one would be liable over it, meaning it would be considered a source of impurity, even in terms of the impurity of a nevela. Because now we view it as regular food, not just something which needs to combine to other meat. The reason why the Mishnah talks about being liable, although the point of the Mishnah is just that it's considered to be a source of tumah, is because it means that since it's a source of tumah, if somebody were to touch it and become impure, and then do something which one is not allowed to do when he is impure, for example, enter the Beis HaMikdash, then he would be liable. But that's really just a roundabout way of telling us that it is considered to be impure, even on a Midoraisa level. Mishnah Beis, although in the previous Mishnah, the Mishnah stated that the skin of an animal, the hide, is not considered to be a part of the meat, which is a source of impurity in its own right, and only because it's considered to be a shomer, something which protects the meat which is attached to it, would it possibly combine to the meat, and that even then, only for the sake of Tumas Oichlim, but not for the sake of Tumas Neveilois. That having been said, Elush Arasayin Kavasaron, the following animals, the following beings, their skin has the same status as the actual meat, because it is soft enough to be considered like the meat and edible in its own right. And the first example is actually Urha Odom, the skin of a person, so obviously the point is not that you're eating it, but that we don't differentiate between a person's skin and the rest of his body. So when a person dies and he is a severe source of tumor impurity, that would apply to the skin of the person as well. Urha Zir Shal Yishuv, and the skin of a domestic pig. The skin is very soft, so it's considered to be fully edible. Rabbi Yosef says, Af Urha Zir Habar, even the skin of a wild pig, although it is not as soft as a domestic pig. Urha Teteres Shal Gomel Haraka, the skin of the hump of a young camel. This refers to a camel which has not yet started to carry burdens on it, and therefore the hump is still soft. V'or ha'roish shel egel harach, and the skin on the head of a young calf. As long as the calf still feeds from its mother, its head is very soft. V'or ha'parosos, the skin in the area of the animal's body where the hooves are. There's a discussion as to how much of the animals, of the area around there is included. V'orbis habishes, the skin which is in the area of the womb of a female animal. V'or hashalil, the skin of a fetus. V'or tachsa alya, the skin which is underneath the tail of an animal that is softer than the rest of the skin of the animal. V'or ha'anoka, v'ha'koyach v'ha'lato v'ha'choymet. These are four of the shrotzim, the small animals which the Torah lists as being a source of impurity when they are dead. There's a discussion as to what exactly the definitions of these animals are. An anoka is a hedgehog, a lato'a is a lizard, a chomet is a snail. It's less clear what exactly a koyach is. And the point of the Mishnah is that the skins of these animals would also be considered a source of impurity. Rabbi Huda says, halato'a kachulda, the skin of the lizard is like the skin of a weasel. A weasel is another example which the Torah gives as being a source of tumah, of impurity. And the skin of the weasel would not combine. Not that it wouldn't combine, it wouldn't be a source of impurity because it is harder, it's not considered to be edible. And according to Rabbi Huda, the same applies to a lizard. The kulon and all of these hides, she'ibdon, she'hilich bohen k'dei avida, if the hides were tanned, they were processed, or they were trampled upon, instead of tanning them in the regular way, once this is done, then the hides become harder and they are certainly not considered to be food items, and as such, to hoyrim, they would be pure. Chutz mi'or ha'odom, except for the skin of a person, midrabbonon, that would remain tome, that would remain impure, in order to prevent people from using the skin of a human being and processing it for the sake of something else. Now, Rechem Ben Nuri says, Shemona shirotzim yeshlein oyois, all eight of the small animals which the Torah lists as being a source of tumah when they are dead, the skins, the hides of those animals would have the same status as the animals themselves, not only the four which the Tanakhama mentioned, or three according to Rabbi Yehuda, but all eight of them according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would be a source of impurity. Just like the meat of these animals. Mishnah Gimel. Up until now, the Perek has been discussing combining the hide of the animal, or other parts of the animal, with the actual meat for it to make up the minimum size. However, even in cases where it cannot combine, the skin can still be considered a part of the animal, a part of the meat, such that if a source of tumor touches only the skin, then all of it would become impure, or if the meat itself is already impure, and the skin is attached to it, and if it touches a different item, it would make the other item impure, even if it only touched the skin. And this is because the skin, the hide of the animal, has the status of a yad, literally a handle, something which is used which in order to, you hold on to that part in order to hold on to the meat. The discussion of this Mishnah is up until what stage of skinning the animal and taking the skin, the hide, off of the animal, is the hide considered to be a yad? A mafshit, babahim of a chayal, one who skins the hide of an animal, whether we're talking about a domestic animal or a more wild animal, batahira or batamea, whether a kosher animal, such that the discussion would be tumas oichlim, the impurity which applies to any food item, ubatamea, or if it is a non-kosher animal, such that the discussion would be tumas nevelais, the impurity of an animal which has not received valid slaughtering to permit it to be eaten. Whatever the type of impurity which is being discussed, badako vagaso, whether it is a smaller animal or a larger animal, l'shotiach, if one is taking the hide off the animal to be used as a mat or a carpet, and as such, the way that they would skin the hide to be used for this is that they would cut from the neck of the animal all the way lengthways down the body of the animal, and then they would strip off the skin from both sides of the cut. If he is skinning the hide in that way, then kedei achiza, the hide would be considered a yad, as long as the amount of hide which has been stripped and skinned off the animal is the amount needed to hold on with one's hand to the skin. But once it has been stripped more than that, we no longer view it as a yad, because we now look at it as something separate from the animal. It happens to be attached, but it is not used. You don't hold on to that in order to hold on to the meat, because most of it has now come off and it's been separated more from the meat of the animal. Ulchemes, if he is stripping the skin off of the animal to be used for the sake of a flask, in that case they would cut a part. They would cut the skin around the neck of the animal and then pull the hide bit by bit down the body of the animal. The hide is, because they would only do it bit by bit, and they would sort of fold over the skin as they were doing it, until he skins off the animal all the way until the breast of the animal, the skin would be considered a yad, but once it has been skinned past that part of the body, then already it's considered something separate which happens to be attached, but it is not something which you use to hold on to the actual animal. And thirdly, hamargil, one who starts skinning the animal from the feet of the animal, from the legs, and once again they would do it bit by bit, kulo chibur latuma, it is all considered to be a attachment for the sake of impurity, meaning we look at it as a yad, as something which you use to hold on to the rest of the animal until you have stripped the entire animal. Although the Mishnah will redefine that in a moment, but first the Mishnah says, litome, this refers and applies to the animal itself becoming impure, meaning if the yad, the skin which is considered to be something which you hold onto the animal with, if that touches a source of impurity, then all of it will become impure, and ulatame, to make something else impure, like we explained. Now, in the case where somebody started skinning the hide from the legs of the animal, the Mishnah said that it's considered to be a yad until the process has been completed. However, the Mishnah is going to redefine that now. Ursh al habos shalat savar, once the hide remains only on the neck, but the rest of it has been skinned, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, Eino chibur, it is no longer considered to be an attachment, a yad, because most of the skin has been taken off, and we definitely don't use that to hold on to the rest of the animal. However, Vachom say chibur, it is considered to be attached, ad sheyafshes shetes kuloi, until he literally takes off all of the skin of the entire animal, but until then it is considered to be a yad, since it would be folded over and he would only take off bit by bit, so it's considered to be something which is used to hold on to the rest of the animal for the entire procedure of the skinning of the animal.